Hey everybody, welcome to the 10th and final episode of Season 1 of Broken English. I am your host, Andrew Mahar, and this week I sit down with Hongming Liao from China. He is a patent attorney living in Chicago right now. It's a great interview. So a lot of this episode is actually just discussing the differences of Chinese culture versus American culture, and what it was like to transition lifestyles, and what it would be like to go back to China if he had to now. Once again, thank you so much for listening to this season. We are over right now, I believe, 800 downloads for this show. So that means the world to me and to my guests. I am so glad that everyone could be tuning in week after week and checking out these people's incredible stories. This one is not short of incredible as well. If you are an immigrant or know an immigrant who lives in the Chicagoland area and would like to do an interview, you can come to my house. This one was recorded in my home, or I can come to you. I have a mobile recording device and computer. I can come right to you and record it in your own home as long as we have a quiet room. But please contact me through brokenenglishpodcast@gmail.com or brokenenglishpodcast.com through the contact page, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. I look forward to recording season 2 in the upcoming months, and we'll be back at the end of summer. So once again, thank you so much. And I hope you really enjoy this episode. So, Hongming Liao, when did you move to the United States?
1998. That's, yeah, the year I finished college back in China.
Okay, and where in China are you from?
The southern part. The province is called Fujian. Fujian province. Some people pronounce it as Fujian.
Okay. Yeah.
It's the province close to Taiwan, the other side of the strait. So Taiwan, Fujian, and then close to Canton.
Okay.
A lot of Canton people here as well.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. And what made you come to the United States?
Good question. So I went to, I was lucky, our generation. So back in China, my father actually didn't get to go to college because of a cultural revolution. Like the whole generation of people didn't get to go to.
What do you mean by that?
That's hard to imagine today. But at that time, Chairman Mao's cultural revolution has this idea that people can be better educated in the real world, which in China is the rural place. So the whole generation of students actually were asked to go to the rural place to be a farmer. So for at least almost 10 years, nobody gets to go to college.
Wow.
So I was lucky. In my generation, I went to school in the 80s. So in the 90s, I went to college. So I went to one of the best college in China. But I'm the only college students in my family. I'm very lucky. And the college I went to is called University of Science and Technology of China. Nickname University of Nerds and Dogs. So all science students. But another special thing about that university, which I found out after I get there, because I'm from a small town, I actually, that's the biggest city I ever went to. It's in a city called Hefei, with about 5 million people.
Wow.
But middle size in China. Anyway, so I find out in that university, a lot of people actually apply for graduate school in United States or other Western country.
Gotcha.
So that's something new to me. So, and I get really excited about the idea, and my family is very supportive. And what we do is, if you have really good grade, so you take the GRE, test.
Yeah.
And some of the graduate school, because I find out later, they always need graduate students, really qualified graduate students to be assistant of their research. So they open up to the world.
Gotcha.
So they set up scholarship, so anybody in the world can apply.
In the United States. Gotcha.
So studying that school, this is actually a normal thing. Like 20% of my classmates end up get to accept in a graduate school in United States or Canada or Australia. So I was lucky. I get the full scholarship from DePaul University.
Yeah, nice.
So that's how I get it, 1998.
That's awesome. So is there not a lot of graduate schools in China that does that kind of research? What were you studying in?
Oh, good question. I was studying computer science. So study computer science, right away you feel that, oh, America is the birthplace of computer, right? Silicon Valley and all this technology. So it's a no-brainer that you think, oh, okay, I need to go to, if I need to pick, United States will be on the top of the list for a lot of people. In China, I would say at that time, 1998, we do have very good graduate school, but competition is very fierce as well. Mm. So we may have maybe 20 really, really good graduate school, but think about that
country. Out of that many people, exactly. That's not a lot of... Yeah.
So for any people who want to get a higher education, if you look at the world, so you end up with trying to put a lot of effort in taking this exam, see whether you are qualified to some of the scholarship.
Gotcha.
That's top choice. And then there's also really good graduate school in China we could get into if we try very hard, right? So in my class, about 20% people actually end up in Western country.
Mm.
About 20% end up in China.
Okay.
About the rest maybe go to the market, like starting to work.
Gotcha. Just stop their education. They graduate.
Yeah, yeah.
And
later they might go to another graduate school, but in terms of this route, it's actually. Look around, it's a very typical choice. It's not like one day I suddenly have this alien idea, I need to go abroad. It's actually influenced by a lot of students in the college.
Gotcha.
But then that college, particular college, is actually one of the few in China that has this opportunity. A lot of people. I would say on average, you will see more and more people open their eyes looking at apply to a scholarship, but it start from the top university, maybe 10 of them, 20 of them, and then more and more. So nowadays, I would say almost any university students in China will think about this choice, whether I want to get higher education in another country or our own country. So which bring back to my beginning saying I'm lucky. So our generation is really lucky. Like my father, we went to the same high school. And we pretty much are one of the best students in that school.
Yeah,
like
really?
I heard people talking like your dad.
It's just brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, I actually get really good grade. In my school, people know about that. They say, oh, you're just like your dad. But think about what's the difference that we get. Like,
right, and you have the opportunity, and you went this far, and then he was, by government, forced to go into manual labor, rural farming work.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's less like a mandate labor. It sounds really bad. It's more like you move to rural place, starting your continual education. So there's no... you still enjoy all the freedom.
Gotcha.
You will provide this channel of going to become a farmer. Like our family will be set up in the rural place. We live in a community. We are friends with all the local.
Mm-hmm.
So looking back, that time, I actually... being very content people, a lot of people really enjoyed that period of time because you raise your family another way.
Yeah, it's more practical learning yeah. than maybe
it's,
so much.
It's not like people were forcing you to go to labor every day, that kind of thing. It's a way of life. Like Chinese have been living their life for 2,000 years.
Right, of just generation after generation
yeah.
doing it.
Yeah.
And so are you an only child? Do you have other brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have a brother and a sister.
Okay.
So
what are they doing? Are they back in China still?
They are older than me, so... We all get the opportunity to go to school, and since they started a little earlier, and we were in a really rural place, so the percentage of the students get to college is like 10%.
Yeah.
So my brother and sister didn't make the cut, so so I'm the only one with college degree, which make me even luckier. I was beginning some of my sets. I'm a lucky guy. I was born with a silver chopsticks in my mouth. Which is true.
So you came here and you were, how old were you when you left school? About like 22?
About 22.
22.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So your family is like, they just wanted you to go do the best you can, or were they happy you left? Are they...
Yeah, that's the thing with Chinese parents. They put really a premium on education.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so
as they
one,
should, as yeah. everyone should.
Yeah. Yeah. So once I told them this idea, like, oh, I saw that so-and-so, like the people in my school, they will apply scholarship and go to USA. I just need to tell them this idea. They are 100% support.
Oh, right.
They have no idea, but they just know better education and... less people will be qualified. It's not something handed to you.
Right.
So they just encourage you. You got to try.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's awesome. Well, yeah. That's cool. Were your brother and sister mad that you got to go?
No, I mean, no. They actually, we are the lucky generation because when we get to the college, even a lot of tuition was paid for because not so many people get to the university and the states actually support most of the university.
Oh, okay.
So we didn't need a lot of money to pay the tuition, but still for the room and board, those kind of stuff. I remember my brother and sister actually contribute a lot.
Really?
So it's the family thing, like, okay, you are the only college, of course.
Go, yeah, right, yeah, here you yeah. are, yeah.
If they start to work, they start to make money, they will send me money, so...
Well, that's awesome. I don't know, I don't want to say that families here wouldn't do that if it mm-hmm. really needed to be done, mm-hmm. but you don't hear about it. You don't hear about
okay.
those situations uh-huh. where... I don't. My family never sent me money.
But
yeah,
like as a college student in China, you pretty much focus on your study. I actually didn't do any part time job back in China, which is normal. Like,
yeah, you just
like your job is study. You are the only college students in China in your family. So of course they'll have. Whole family wants you to just concentrate on the study and financially my family always support.
Now when did you learn English in China?
So we have English class starting from middle school, which will be like grade 7 or 8, but that's like what you learn in Spanish
yeah.
in high school. You tend to forget, like you don't use it.
Absolutely, I forgot everything I learned.
But when I get to college, because I study computer science, a lot of textbook actually is written in English because it's hard to translate technology.
Oh, okay, because it's like
terminology.
Jargon.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah.
very specific
yeah.
terminology to.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Wow, so that's terrifying.
So I pick up English probably more than average. Another thing is in that college, a lot of people starting prepare going abroad. So although it's a science and engineering school, a lot of people actually pay a lot of attention to study English.
Interesting. So yeah, because that would be absolutely terrifying if someone gave me a textbook and said, like, I learned Spanish in 7th and 8th grade, and then they said, hey, your entire job depends on you knowing Spanish. I'd lose my mind. I'm screwed.
For the longest time, we never figure out what's the point of study foreign language while everybody around you speak Mandarin, right?
Yeah.
So in college, it becomes different. One thing is the technology term. We realize it's actually more accurate if I read the English version. Another thing is you're starting to get in touch more culture things, like watching movies. Like in college, you're starting to watch some of the movies, Hollywood movies, and it open your eyes. Actually, we can't understand the conversation most of the time, so we use subtitle.
Oh, yeah.
Chinese subtitle, so we get the story, no problem. I remember a couple movie that impressed me a lot. A lot of people like those movies. Like, I also using the set. Like, before coming to United States, I know a lot about American because I watched those movies.
Yeah.
To know a typical American, I watch Forrest Gump.
that's very fun. That is a pretty good start. Yeah.
And to understand a typical American family, I watch Kramer versus Kramer. So anyway, I do watch those movies and get to know, and a lot of us get interested in, like, the American way of life and just want to find out more. And I also talk about, like, when I first come to the United States, it just doesn't feel like what I imagined.
What is the picture that you had? Like, how in China, how is America perceived?
Good question. I mean, overall, I tend to think of Chinese people think American in a very positive way, right from the start. The name. When we name a country, we can't just, because the sound system is different. We can't translate every syllables. American, four syllables, right? But then we will pick one sound and use a character to name this country.
Ah.
And guess what character we choose? American. We choose M, that sound. And then we choose a word. And guess which word we choose? We choose beautiful. Beautiful country. 美国. People generally just
interesting.
You will name a country positively if you think positively. And England, we choose the ing sound. And guess which character we choose? We choose hero.
Oh.
So heroic country. So to the Western country, most of the name, generally, we'll pick a really positive name to depict this country.
Interesting. That's a good place to start. Yeah.
Yeah. So historically, Chinese people have this view of, after getting in touch with the technology, knowing that some of the technology were lagging behind, so like all the trains, airplanes, internet, computers, invented by the West country, right?
Yeah.
So naturally, we will have this mindset of, oh, that's a more advanced country. So when an average people think about a Western country, a United States in particular, you think about a more advanced country. And just the name, again, is a lot of positive reinforcement of this country.
So can you think of a country that has a negative name right out of the top? Just for an example, who does China hate?
Japan.
Really?
In the World War II, Japan invade a lot of the Asian country. So invade half of the Chinese territory. So that was really bad time. So the name itself is neutral, but in terms of hating a country, I told people that that I don't hate Chinese. I don't hate Japanese. I drive Japanese car. I use Japanese. I hate specifically that group of Japanese who invaded China in 1940.
Yeah, they're all dead.
Exactly. So to a individual Japanese sitting across me right now, we can be friends. Just with there's nothing to do with him.
But your grandfather,
exactly, somebody was killed by that group of people. Yeah. Of course, I hate them. But lack of better term, people will say I hate this country and these people. That's not accurate.
Yeah,
you hate specific the action. You should hate that kind of action so that nobody repeat it.
Yeah, and I think that they're on the track now. They haven't really come at China in a while. Right?
And back to your question of how Chinese will perceive Western world, so I tend to bring up the positive first, but we cannot ignore the negative. Exactly, because after the Opium War, Opium War, which is England and China, so British pretty much just beat China down and say, we have to sell opium to you, that kind of sickness, okay? And then right after that, the ally of the Western kind of invade China in a way to give China a lesson that open your port, so don't resist. So that history was really deep in Chinese mind. Like okay, so Western country, for the motivated by profit, right?
Yeah.
Not by some people might say after colonization of certain part of Asian, Western world actually bring good things to maybe India or Philippines, that kind of argument. But still, the profit come first, right?
Right. Money first, money friendship first. Later. Yeah.
So luckily, China wasn't colonized in a large scale. Maybe only Hong Kong, but still, as a country being beaten by Western country and have to open the port because we fail in the war. So that history really is deep in people's mind.
Yeah.
So you, of course, the if there's a conflict, people will think very negatively because the history. Although I tend to find to Westerners, they tend to see that as long time ago, 100 years at least, like 150 years. But to Chinese, it's really close. It's like yesterday we were just invaded by Japan, and then the day before we were invaded by a group of Western countries.
Right.
So we're vulnerable. So when there's conflict, you will see Chinese people get really with full of indignation sometimes, saying you can't do that, you can't do that, instead of Western would be saying, that's history. Now we're talking about doing things in the right way.
Right.
Why don't you follow us? Because we do better as a country.
Yeah.
So that kind of negativity is there. But generally, I think more educated people realize the reason China was lagging behind was we are not learning enough science, technology, those kind of thing, which Western country did very well. Of course, there's a lot of things we need to learn from. So it's a mix. But personally, the fact that I'm living in the United States, I tend to say more positive.
Yeah, good. Well, so when you got here, like you said, it was not what you thought it would be. And you came straight to Chicago, right? Did you go anywhere else? Have you visited other parts of the country?
I mean, before coming here, you have a very a vague impression of a country, mostly from movies.
Yeah, well, Forrest Gump covered a lot of America, but only like a small stretch where he was running in the back.
Yeah, and you tend to fill all this empty space with your imagination.
Absolutely.
So end up, there's a picture really unrealistic. The movie give you unrealistic picture. So I was saying that, I can't find the American that's in my imagination or in my mind until the day I visit Universal Studio. I find that's
been your picture the whole time. Like, finally, America.
Anyway, that's just a little joke. But it's very hard to know a city or people, let alone a country. I live in United States, like, now almost 20 years. I mean, if people back in China ask me what's American like, I couldn't give them a very good picture.
It's too much. You have to see it for yourself. It's the same thing of me being like, what's China like? I have no idea. Mm-hmm. Movies, pictures, you know, who knows? But I've seen all these ridiculous, like these crazy pictures, beautiful, and then the crowded cities. I have no idea the in-between, between like the forests and the rivers and stuff, and then just a million people shoulder to shoulder in the middle of a city. It's exactly the same
too,
the other direction.
Too much for you to learn as an outsider, and I actually open a lot of time with this, like, oh, if you have never been to China, this is a quick picture. Just imagine a Chinatown, and then imagine that all the neighboring towns are also Chinatown. I mean, it's easy for me to say that because there's some truth in it.
Right, it's a lot easier than the actual.
It's a picture. I can draw this picture because I know there's more things under this picture.
Yeah.
But then I can confidently show you this picture because I was born in China. My whole family is in China. I know so much about China so that I can confidently tell you that's part of the picture of China.
Right.
So which actually is a huge advantage of, I think, immigrants, like the value immigrants can provide to America. Like, I really think Americans are lucky, I mean, to have all these people just willingly from all over the world come to this single country and then swap stories, because you have to have the real people. Yeah,
that's the whole show is. That's
exactly
what we're doing right here.
Exactly.
I'm doing my best to do the thing you're talking about. I really do find that there is a huge benefit to learning more of what's happening other places and what it took for you to come here than it is to just be like,
you need a real story, real people. The fact people already live here. I mean, some people say immigration is probably the most authentic compliment you can pay to a country.
I'm going to give up everything and I'm going to move there and stay there and give them my money and tax money. Yeah, that's a good point. So you came here and you came to Nepal, and then you moved here and just started into school. You had grants and different stuff, so you didn't have to work. You're just studying.
Yes. So we, in terms of the struggle of immigrant, I was the lucky kind. I was provided, right? So all I have to do is finish my job and I get money from the department, and then I actually get hired by DePaul I did all the work, and they do need people. So that's the a lot of people get the H-1B visa. Yeah, exactly. So I was on student visa, which is non-immigration category. So you study, after you graduate, you go back to your country.
Oh, right.
So
right.
If you want to really immigrate to this country, you need either working visa or other kind of family-based visa.
Right.
So I got hired by DePaul. So a lot of people will apply job to, many of my friends will apply job to maybe Microsoft, because those are the, in computer science, those are the best company at that time, right?
Yeah.
Now Google,
right? There's a few other that have taken their place.
Anyway, so that's the logic of lots of people in my track will try to get our education and then try to, because working experience is also part of the education.
Mm.
So you want to get to this best company. One good example is the founder of, I think it's Baidu. Do you know the Baidu company? So mm-hmm. it's the equivalent of Google.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just as big. So he went through almost the same track like us. I think he went to University of New York University in Buffalo.
Oh, okay.
So in his PhD dissertation, he wrote about search engine. So at one point, he actually accused the Google guy stealing his idea. But anyway, actually...
So he wrote about that before Google?
Almost at the same time.
Interesting.
Because
okay.
Before that, there's Yahoo. I mean, Yahoo is doing search for... So there's overlapping, I'm
yeah.
sure. But in his case, I think he was into search engine right about the same time Google was coming up. So, but then he decided to go back to China to set up Baidu.
Mm.
It's a very successful story. But that's a lot of people thinking is, yeah, if you have United States leading in this industry, so you come to learn in its university or in its corporation, and eventually, in his case, he was a huge success.
Oh, you're right, right. So you guys see that, and you're like, oh, we could do that.
Yeah. So for me, I was a failure because.
Oh, it's already been done, man.
Yeah,
you can't blame yourself for not coming up with the third Google. You know, there could be only so many. I would be. Don't be so hard on yourself.
I was in computer science, and I enjoy it. I even during my PhD, I started to teach in DePaul. I really enjoyed it. But the aspect of American culture, like living, I was thinking exactly like the computer runs exactly the same, whether it's in China or in US.
Right.
And I come all the way here to learn something I can easily just read a book about.
In China, yeah.
But what I could not get in China is this society around me, how the society is run, and what's the difference between some more fundamental differences.
Yeah.
So that's when I get interested in law. I actually went to law school in DePaul
okay.
while I was working for DePaul. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe too many jokes. I was saying that I was so busy all those years. I got a PhD. I got a JD. I got a JOB. And if STD is a degree, I probably have it. I do get a PhD and a JD.
Wow.
Which
that's
I mean,
incredible.
It's a lot of time.
That's incredible. How long did that take you by the time you finished your law degree?
Yeah, it's more than 10 years, the whole stretch. I was working. So I actually, during that process, because immigration process is long, one of the reasons I stayed in DePaul is, yeah, kind of waiting for my green card because you need H-1B, but you need permanent residence to be more, like, settled.
Okay.
Otherwise, if you lose your job, you're out of status, you go back to China. So applying for green card, which take 7 or 8 years, so in that period, I also get my PhD, later get my JD. So that's one thing about immigrant is you never feel settled down. Like it's not a country you feel comfortable. So one thing pushed me maybe to get all this degree is, okay, the more the better.
Right, right. And so what was that like? I mean, so we've got your school down, but like socially when you showed up, were there other Chinese students that you like clung to? Was there,
mm-hmm.
what was America like for you outside of school? Was it like terrifying or were you just like excited to be in Chicago?
I was really excited. And we have a group of students studying in DePaul. So we form our group, Chinese students group.
Mm.
So there's actually 10 to 20 of them. So
okay.
we help each other. And the fact we have Chinatown in Chicago just works out perfectly.
Did you like go to Chinatown and like hang out and like, is it actually like comfortable for, I've hung out, I've walked through, but I never know if it's like, is this like what it's like actually, like is that actually what China's like?
Because those shop owner, they would do something, because many of them from Canton, I can tell. So the close city, most of Chinatown resemble to is Hong Kong, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually, if you take a picture of Hong Kong and a picture of any Chinatown in major city, they look alike.
Design and the architecture,
yeah, exactly.
And all that stuff.
So as Chinese, you're walking down those street, you actually feel very, very good. For me, the first time, couple time I went to Chinatown, I just feel, oh, for a second, I kind of back in China.
Interesting.
And later, I starting to tell story, one of the story, which is also true, is that sometimes just walking down the street in Chinatown, you hear a little piece of melody, and then right away, you know all the lyrics, because you know that song, right?
Oh, yeah.
That feels really good. And I've been living in US for like 20 years, and all American sounds, most of them, I cannot make lyrics out of. I listen to them, and they're just like white noise. I hear like Eminem for like a couple years, I make out one word, that was spaghetti. Anyway, yeah. So the contracts, like even for me, my English probably above average because I pay a lot of attention to it. So
yeah.
I think I understand a lot of cultural references, and so I don't feel out of place a lot of time living in Chicago. But still, even for me, the contracts of being in Chicago in America compared to being in Chinatown is huge.
Mm.
Like walking in Chinatown, it's just like, oh, I kind of home, right? So
yeah.
I hear anything, I can, from that little piece of melody right away, I can picture something that only this group of people will understand.
Right.
You just feel that kind of special connection. So it's real, like Chinatown. The fact that every major city has to have a Chinatown, because there's a need.
Is that right? Because you can't, right?
Yeah,
so do you think
it's that, not a coincidence.
So you would say that having a Chinatown in every city is a positive thing for having just like a way to go back home for a minute.
Yeah, I mean, for those early immigrants, Chinatown is actually their like safe place to go to. It's sad, like the first wave of Chinese immigrant actually had the hardest life on them, because first they start to build a railway in California, and they work side by side with Irish immigrant.
Right.
Like the story I read is like the head of the company used to favor Irish immigrant because they work really hard, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of Irish get into this railway building business. And then the Chinese immigrants starting to come in, the labor start to come in, and then all these companies starting to favor Chinese labor because they can work for less.
Ah.
They work even harder. Because they come all the way, and usually just a single male. They don't bring family. So all they do is work.
Right,
they
you got nothing else to do.
Accumulate some money, send back home. So all they do is work, and then other group of people, the locals, other immigrants, starting to feel really threatened. And to a degree, once the railway business is done, the Chinese immigrant can very few places like welcome them, because they see the competition right away.
Yeah.
This group of people is going to just get your job because they work on Sundays.
Right, they don't care. Yeah, they will be there.
Yeah, they work anytime. They work the lowest wage. And to the point that in American history, there's only one legislation to exclude based on race. There's just one, which is Chinese Exclusion Act. That's the only legislation to exclude people by race. So wow. Chinese Exclusion Act, which was in place for at least like 80 years, I would think.
I remember reading about, like, in middle school, they, like, glance over that stuff, and they're like...
I mean, it's not something people want to...
Right,
want
well, especially to, Americans are exactly. Like,
yeah, the act literally was repealed, like 20, 30 years ago. I mean, the apology was given only maybe 10 years, 20 years ago, I would say.
That's crazy.
People don't want to look at. Interestingly, exactly the same thing happened in Canada. So
Canada did that to China.
About the
as
same
well.
Time, they introduced this legislation.
Wow.
Chinese Exclusion
I don't know
Act.
If that makes me feel better, but it makes me think less of Canada.
It shows this trend. I think it's the human reaction. It shows something which is still true today because Asian immigrants are one of the group that very hard to assimilate, because the look are so different. I feel bad for those Chinese or Asian descent who have been living in the United States for like 5-6 generations, but they still look like a foreigner.
Yeah.
Study, one of the law professor come up this term called perpetual foreigner, which describe Asian descent, which is true.
Right, absolutely.
Like, there's exactly the same percentage of possibility of somebody like that living in the United States for 6 generations, but look Chinese, so racially Chinese, walking on the street, and me walking on the street, there's exactly the same possibility of he being called, go back to your country.
Right.
I have friends being called like that because people drive by, they saw you, and they just say, go back to your country. I mean, for me, if I heard that, I haven't heard that personally. Mm. Some of my friends heard that. So I wouldn't feel that bad because I do have a country to go back to.
Yeah, I have a home. I have a place to go.
I'm thinking about it. Except I don't have a idea like Baidu to make billions of dollars.
until you create the next Google, I can't go back.
Exactly. So I wouldn't feel too bad because... But think about the people who is living here probably longer than the people who's...
Right.
Giving this shout, he probably second generation.
right. Who knows?
From,
maybe anybody.
From, yeah. I mean, imagine how hard they will feel. They will live here forever. The same time when the Irish railway worker, imagine their descent right now, I don't think they will feel any less American, right?
Right, exactly.
The Asian descent will feel really un-American.
So with that being said, do you allow, because I know it's not you're not the gatekeeper of Chinatown, but are there like Koreans and Japanese who want to visit Chinatown?
Oh,
too?
It's open. Welcome everybody.
Well, I get that part, but like, do you find there's like a lot of Japanese, like who are just like, well, because there's no Japan, Japantown, you know? What I mean, there's no Korean.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a Korean. I mean, there's like small Korean neighborhoods, but like, there's no blocked off area with different type of buildings and stuff.
I think, people will not go out of way to make these kind of rules, but then there's like self-imposed restriction, like. When we come and if we know that block has more Chinese and that block has more Vietnamese, like actually sometimes people call the Aga area.
Oh yeah.
Aga and Broadway as North Chinatown or Vietnamese town.
Because there's a lot of Vietnamese up there.
So
yeah.
So for us, it's not like we discriminate or something. Say, if I'm opening a shop, I will consider the South first because I'm Chinese. So
right.
So that kind of... But if a Korean Vietnamese open a shop in South Chinatown, everybody's welcome. They probably do well because they are a little different
right.
from other people. So,
gotcha.
In a way, personally, if I saw Asian in Chicago, I mean, the fact that we are both Asian actually stand out. Like we understand something.
You both look at each other and you're like, you guys just kind of high five and go on your day.
Yeah, I mean, there's that kind of, if between Asians we fight each other in U.S., who's going to help you?
Right, no one wins. Yeah, it's so tough. Well, you might as well unite at that point. So during this time you're in school, now you said you have kids, right?
Uh-huh.
When did your personal life start to, I mean, uh-huh. you were in school, do you have uh-huh. a wife or a girlfriend?
Yeah, I met my wife back in college before both of us graduated in college. So
okay.
we went to
in
different
in
China.
Oh, wow.
College.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
So I'm 2 years advanced, so I graduated earlier. I came to Chicago, and then she came 2 years later than me. We actually get married in Skokie.
Really?
The courthouse in Skokie.
Wow! Okay.
2001, because okay. I came in 1998. So we've been married for a long time, and we had a kid, one 6-year-old daughter, 8-year-old son right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Living Park Ridge.
Is that where you stay now, Park
yeah,
Ridge?
Yeah.
So what does she do? What is her quest a little bit?
Good question. She actually majored in English back in college.
If she wants
China.
To do an episode, she can come down and
okay.
do the whole thing. I have no idea if she'd be interested.
She will contradict me. Anyway, but we have a similar track in terms of coming to U.S., but the other thing is, when your major is English, you don't really have a major.
Right, yeah, the language doesn't help.
In U.S. But then she found a job working for Chinatown lawyer. So a lawyer specialized in immigration stuff.
Okay.
So he's Chinese, so we really appreciate the opportunity, so she get to kind of into the paralegal role, and that become her career track. In fact, that halfway through that process also gave me more opportunity to understand law, which eventually to me going to law school.
So what do you do? What is your job? We actually haven't got it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now?
So
what do you do? You have all these degrees. You're a lawyer. You're a doctor.
Exactly.
You're a...
I'm going to use it, right? So if with the advanced degree in computer science and with a law degree, and you ask anybody who knows about these two fields will recommend patent.
Patent law,
yeah.
Okay.
Which actually works out perfect. I get into this field even before graduate from law school. So I work as a patent attorney for a technology company.
Oh, okay. In a technology company in Chicago?
Yeah. Our company is called Here Technology, which do map. We do map stuff. We provide map to... data, one of the world's largest map data provider.
Wow!
Very
like, cool like digital maps for like phones.
Yeah,
like different,
we
like...
collect all the location-based data, feeds to all the vehicles who has a navigation system.
No way!
Very cool technology.
Wow! That is awesome. Well, that's cool. Yeah, yeah. So like it was set like the whole satellites and like GPS location
and
all that stuff.
Yeah, there's engineer doing that stuff. But for me, particularly if there's an innovation, so I help to pick those that has value and apply for patent application. Which my both of my technology background and legal background can help in my job. So that's my job site, patent attorney. Another thing, you know, I went to open mic to do
comedy. Yeah.
So you also understand if you are 100% content with your job, you wouldn't do that.
You wouldn't do it. Yeah, that's why
investment. So I could say that the fact that draw me to comedy is almost the same as the fact draw me to law. Just trying to understand the society, understand the stories.
Ah.
So after you understand part of story, and then you know your own side of story so well, so there's a point you want to tell your story. So
right.
Again, your podcast.
And here we are. Yeah, we're doing it right
exactly.
Now.
Exactly. So doing comedy is actually one way for me to tell my side of story. But I also find, yeah, when we do open mic, we saw each other in the Get Up.
Yeah, Get Up stand-up. Yeah, the public.
A couple
house.
Times. So 4 minutes. So there's no way you can tell a cohesive story.
You need
so
the full hour
now,
and a half.
More like small one, like, oh, I want to tell my side story. Like what you see. You see stuff made in China everywhere, right?
Yeah.
But when I see those, you see made in China, I see homemade.
Right.
That kind of, I have to cut really short.
Yeah, you took an entire life experience of witnessing factories and production and mass
production.
Make
it a joke, right?
You just chop it down. I don't know. Yeah, it does a little bit of, I don't know if it does it a favor or not, but that's very.
But eventually, yeah, we get more stage time. We can tell a longer story. And like in your podcast, longer story.
Absolutely, you get a little stretch it out a little bit. Yeah, so
yeah, I think comedy is not the goal. It should not be the goal. And telling story is closer to the goal, or telling the meaning of certain things.
Right.
So which combine everything.
Yeah, I actually agree. That's very wise. Does your family know you do comedy? Like, do they do they like it? Do they get it? Is there stand up in China? I feel very ignorant about this because I don't know.
There's comedy in China. There's comedy in every culture because people want to laugh.
Absolutely,
right?
You need it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but there's different sense of humor. That's also true, and a lot of it is language specific.
Right.
And Chinese and English are so different. They are like Apple and Mandarin. So a lot of people will ask me this question. So, and I personally think most of the time the reason people laugh are exactly the same.
Yeah.
Like why you laugh, because there's a disconnection of things.
Exactly.
That's exactly the same. But to make a people who only speak Chinese, like my parents, if I want to tell something to make them laugh or their group of people laugh, the same joke it translate might not make American laugh. That's true. But I nowadays I starting to tell stories. Then I find this couple story, it's not language specific.
It's just fun.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's just
it's a
fun.
Funny thing that happened.
Yeah, I told my kids, second grade, he comes home with questions I don't understand. Like, Dad, can you point out the Mississippi River for me on the map? And I can't. And he persists. And finally, I have to say, I can't. This is a map of China. So if I tell that in Chinese, same thing.
Right.
Right.
Which is ironic that you work in the mapping patent industry.
Yeah. So, but a lot of puns.
Yeah. Oh. Okay.
So, people will only understand because it's very language specific.
Yeah.
There's no way I can tell my parents why this joke is funny because you can easily translate this joke to another language.
That's awesome. So they're very supportive that you're out there just having fun at nighttime. And your wife supports it. Does she come out and watch, or she watches?
She watched when I did one of the show in Whip Theater.
Oh, yeah, Whip. Yeah.
So she watched. That's probably my first show.
Were there any instances in America where you're like, this just isn't for me, that you wanted to, like, turn back to China?
I'm more really positive person. So even there is, I tend to somehow like downplay or even forget. Like off the top of my head, I can't think of like really like negative experience.
Really? As an immigrant or other people that haven't really...
I mean, I heard, of course, a lot, like the Chinese Exclusion Act, like those stories. But for myself, one real story that I feel relevant to this is when I first started to learn how to drive, I live around Bridgeport, so near Chinatown, actually. So the street was not busy at all, so I just learned on the street. And I came out probably evening, so and less traffic. So I was just driving really slow and first couple of times, and I heard one guy, I never forget, just shout to me, "You can't drive," that kind of, I didn't even make out the words at the beginning, and I have to think later at home, and knowing the stereotype of Asian, it fits that you can't drive. That's the close I can figure out. You can't drive.
You can't.
So I feel bad. But
I'm learning. Brand new.
but then the real story comes just a couple months ago after a set. I was very happy with the set. And I was driving, and then I was so happy I forget to turn on the light. And the people shout to me, "Turn on your light."
Yeah, your headlight.
And I realized the guy I saw was saying, "You can drive," is actually saying, "Turn on your light." It has to be, because I wasn't turning on the light. And I was, and at night, there's no way he can saw me as Asian. There's no way. But I was so sensitive, and I would connect to the drive quickly than the light.
Then you heard it. You're like, oh, God, the flashback.
Yeah, because it's exactly intonation. So, and
so you were...
so the one really bad experience turned out...
It was actually just getting
it was
you
my
help.
Mistake.
He was helping you not hit a car.
One thing is, you tend to be really... sensitive or vulnerable, knowing your differences. Mm. So there's some instant you can be oversensitive. But I know people had, I have close friends in Chicago working on the street recently was shouted "Get back my job," or that kind of thing. Couple instances. I was surprised. I wish I had somebody shout that to me. And
you'd have to go to school for 12 years to do this.
I can access more like what kind of person is that, a homeless person, like really just frustrated? Because I tend to think like people are more the same. Like when you're frustrated, you say things less reasonable.
Absolutely.
And depends on the day. If this is a guy who hadn't eaten for a day, and he was so frustrated, and he sees somebody doing really much better than him, and looks foreign, he might be an immigrant, like five generation, but he can shout like, "What the hell? Like get back my job. I could have your job."
Right. That's You should be back somewhere else.
Yeah, not to say it's right to say that at all, but I tend to think like you put this same person in another situation, maybe somebody just gave him $10 and he had a really good meal, and maybe it's an Asian gave him the $10 and he saw another Asian, I don't think he would shout the same word, same person.
That's very wise. What do you, now with like the current situation with Trump and all that stuff, what do you, with his like talk of immigration, would you say that some people are more fueled by this pro-America first thing to maybe be encouraged to yell something out? Because now they're not afraid to?
I do feel that, because the couple incidents I heard was actually very recent. So you can see a guy being encouraged by this kind of rhetoric, like American first.
Yeah.
So, and starting to label things. But the thing is, it's very hard to label what's American first. Like, say, buying from China, is that American first or Chinese first, right? I mean,
most of them are American companies.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to buy things from China, but the fact you buy, you save money because that's one source you can get things cheaper because our labor is cheaper.
Yeah.
So you end up saving money on that aspect. You're welcome to buy from England, like buy anything made by any other country. But the fact that there's cheap labor, it's actually changing now. It's getting expensive. So
and also on top of all these tariffs and all these things, like so Trump, if you've heard, is like trying to put on all these things to the whole Southeast Asia region, that entire sea. He's trying to make it so that they can't send stuff to America. Do you think that's going to help anything? What's going to happen to China if we stop? What if we just today, everyone was like, I'm done buying from China. What happens to China? You just sell to the rest of the world? Or is it just, the United States consumes a lot of Chinese goods.
Yeah, I actually personally met a person, but it's almost 10 years ago, and she was really against the idea of buying from China because she read something about the condition of the workers, so she's just conscious about that. She cannot support that kind of practice. So she's telling me, at least for her, she will consciously try to avoid buying from China. Made in China. So at that time, what I told her is it doesn't make sense because this, in any country that produce any product, there will be negative aspect of it.
Yeah.
So there's no way you can really find out who produced this piece of hardware and in that process. So I'm not saying that really bad working condition is right, but actually those people their condition was improving so fast. Like in China, there's a labor shortage.
Like really?
Yeah, there's the company, Apple company, all those companies are moving out. I think all the garment industry is moving out to Bangladesh because there's cheaper. So, I mean, it's economic 101.
Yeah.
Like, if this group of people willing to work for less, like, if you find out one of the factory in China has no air conditioning in 90 degrees, so I stop buying from them. What that's...
that is, yeah.
you end up buying somebody work in even harsher condition. There's no way you can find out.
And so it'll go somewhere else. That's because I also feel that, like, I feel that way. And now as I get to a point in my life when I'm not a wealthy man by any means, but I can, like, buy union-made, like, the shirt is, like, made in a union where, like, someone's, okay, a little bit better off. And that is a thing that I feel. Like, I've stopped going to Walmart just for the sake of being, like, I watched some documentary about the working conditions of the Walmart factory, like the stuff that's produced directly for the sand, like the, and it made me very sad and very upset. So I stopped going there, and I guess maybe it just makes her feel better. Like I feel like I feel a lot better, even though I'm probably like this desk. All of this entire room was made from borderline what America would call slave labor. Would you say that these workers are? Would you call it slave labor in China?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Some of the negative image is not accurate anyway, because, for example, when you think of Chinese labor, a lot of people actually think about child labor, because that's the image that stick to people's mind, because it's so bad.
Yeah,
because
like, child labor is so bad. Yeah.
Like, any country that allows that is so bad. But to us, that's like 30 years ago for a short period of time, like when regulation cannot be enforced, you see child labor. But then it's something that we don't see anymore. Like, I don't know anybody.
Really?
Because as Chinese parents, who will let their kids to work in a factory instead of going to school?
Okay, okay, I'm glad you said that.
There's no parents.
This has cleared up a lot of stuff for me. This is
yeah,
making me feel a lot better.
But I know the image, that just that phrase cannot get out of your mind, child labor.
Yeah.
And you could see picture of child laboring, but then for us, we can quickly put in a perspective. Okay, that's 1976 for that year, this factory. Maybe there's one factory right now. I correct myself. I couldn't think any parents will allow their child, no matter how poor they are.
Back in the 70s, what about
those kids? People were so poor. And still, it's anomaly. It's even in Chinese standard, child labor was an anomaly.
Really?
I'm sure in American history, there's a time child labor wasn't a problem.
Right. Oh, there's like, absolutely.
Exactly.
The textiles,
exactly.
All that stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the Chinese process was lagging behind. So it's at a time like American child labor was just absolutely zero tolerant. At that time, China has 1% some anomalous cases. So, but I understand why that image can hardly get out of people's mind, like eating dogs. I understand why you can never get this image of Chinese eating dog out of people's mind, but then for us, it's very easy to put in perspective. We grow up, I know all the Chinese, none of them will even think about eating a cat. I mean,
but they did at one point, is what you're saying.
One group of people eating, maybe a specific regional thing,
yeah.
Like customer, like even more in Korean, in one of the region, like people get used to, and they don't connect. And maybe it's specific kind of animal they tend to eat, or rats, like so. But it's very easy for us to put in perspective, like child labor is bad, but we passed that long ago. But it's harder for Westerners to look at the made in China product and not to think maybe there's a child working behind.
Right,
I mean, that should make you feel bad.
Right, and it does, and it does. And I don't like, you know, there's a thing about, like, you know, buying American and trying to do it. I understand keeping money within the company, but I also think, like, you know, if you buy from, like, Apple's an American company, like, but also, I mean, so some people made some money in China or in Asia in general, and then we also made money off of the same purchase. So, I mean, there's a level of it where it's like, you know, your money is going to go to China eventually. Anyway, like someone's going to, things were outsourced.
Uh-huh.
There's parts in here that were made in Korea, made in
uh-huh.
Germany,
yeah,
made in everywhere.
Yeah, it's too much to.
There's no
to
way
find
the
out.
Whole thing would be covered in stickers.
Uh-huh.
Every country was made, it would be impossible. So I feel like the trick of buying American is almost also a lot of Asia owns our metal. A lot of China owns the majority of the world's, like, metal supply anyway. So there's almost impossible
yeah,
either way.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I don't think it's morally wrong first it's impossible to track down. So,
yeah.
So but then I think it's more of consciously making a choice what your effort can be best put. It's just not an area that can best make your voice sound. Like, even you live your whole life not buying anything from China, you live a really hard life.
Yeah, because it's a lot of stuff.
But
yeah.
Then, what did you really accomplish? But then, if you use all that effort into other way, even just let people know what you're thinking and educate people, I do think, The fact that Chinese regulation is lagging behind is overall, at 30 years ago, a lot of people don't think certain, like, working environment is big a deal. Like, if this guy willing to work for this little amount of money under this harsh situation, let him work. There's no labor protection, which happened exactly like that in U.S.
Absolutely. My job right now is not technically up to code as far as air quality. Exactly. I'm a welder.
So it takes a while.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
If and just by human nature, we could say that, say, if the number is 30 years, so 30 years later, something you hate to see will not exist in China. So if you keep pointing finger at people who are 30 years behind you, that can be your full-time job. Because they're 30 years behind you.
Yeah.
Then this is wrong. That is wrong. That is wrong. This choice of what your best effort can be used. Like, specifically, I would say for a lot of social conscious people, like, the fact that they were... I appreciate that they go out of way to find out, oh, this really bad condition for a certain worker in China. I mean, that's some right thing to do.
Yeah.
But then I also feel that the same amount of effort if spent on finding out how an inner city child was going through really harsh condition, even getting a normal education, how helpful that can be. And you could be literally living in the same city.
Right.
There's more tangible way for you to make a difference.
I do that. It's kind of a lazy way to get away with feeling good. Because if I just like this shirt was made union made, but I don't know who made the fabric. I don't know, the fabric couldn't come from, you know, so it's like, oh, well, you know, it was sewn by an American man making $20 an hour, but who knows? And so I find that, like, it's a cop-out. It's an easy way to, if I just avoid Chinese products, that's so much easier than seeking out a child on the South Side and giving them $20 a week for school lunch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I feel like it, especially here, and it's going that way. Mm-hmm. Like organic food, the whole thought of being like, let's be better people, but in kind of a mediocre, lazy way. And I'm one of them. I'm absolutely one of them. But, you know, I kind of see why they do
it. Yeah. And sometimes, from my perspective, knowing both sides, a lot of positive things coming from just being yourself. Like America is setting up really good example for other country in a lot of things.
Mm.
So just doing the things that you are good, you are actually doing the world a huge favor.
Mm.
So just doing the things you feel is right, but do it to yourself.
Help everybody.
Not pointing fingers, because once you started pointing fingers, one, for a lot of sensitive person, they will connect with other things. I know a lot of people in China will, whatever issue, if it's coming from outside, right away they close, because they right away they think about opium war, it doesn't help.
Yeah.
But then still, it's just feel bad that why another country has to order us what to do.
Yeah.
Even if it's the right thing. But then, this same people, just by watching what other people are doing as a reasonable people, if it's a good thing, they try to learn. Like, what China is doing, the way that Chinese running their business, like Baidu and Google. What's the difference between Baidu and Google? That Google has to teach.
Right.
Just do your own thing, and if it's a good thing, other people from other country is going to learn from you, learn from the good thing.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that don't try to teach other people, but teaching by being a good example in terms of this country scenario, I think it's best, because otherwise you really get into unnecessary hostile situation.
Yeah.
I will, one example, I don't know whether it's good to give, is like, say, when America has some slavery, that's 20, in the 20s, 30s, if another country that don't condone slavery starting to point finger or even send troops to America. What do you think America will feel?
Right, right, yeah.
Like
crap, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Do you need another country to correct your system? No, like, you don't. Like, even slavery. A lot of countries at that time actually don't have slavery. If they have an ally and they say, let's invade United States, let's free all those slaves.
Yeah.
I can imagine that American people will unite together to fight the outside first,
right,
before they tend to the slavery issue.
Oh, man. Just big wisdom here. This has been
But this is very true.
You're very correct. I really do believe you're right. If someone come in and says, stop doing that.
Yeah, it's like when we study law, like, people give absolutely higher protection to your personal property. One of the principle was set up with this saying, like, a man's house is his castle.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the legal principle. A country, think about country. Like, the whole country, people was viewing this country as sacred castle.
Yeah.
So any other country trying to influence, they will just protect, like, their family.
So do you think that, and this is just me, now we're just talking about vague ideology at this point. So do you think Chinese companies and owners would be insulted by me not buying T-shirts from a Chinese company?
I don't think so. They have no time.
They're making too many T-shirts.
I mean they probably interact with 2-3 businessmen they will send to other market. They don't even know what the user. Yeah. One of my friends are actually doing very good in import export in China, and he specialized in shoes, and he told me that 2/3 of the prisoners in U.S. wear his shoes.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
that's ironic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, do you want whoever is in charge of the prisoner system saying that, oh, let's just change our order?
Right.
2/3 of the shoes now will come from another country.
Yeah.
You don't see that. They see numbers. These shoes cost so much. And my friend who's in charge of this export import, he doesn't produce the shoes. He go to factory. He might change factory sometimes, and he will buy the cheapest on the market.
Sure, it's
and
business,
then,
yeah.
Yeah, the factory will try find the cheapest labor. I don't think anybody can find labor. That's for sure.
That's good to know. That's very good to know.
It will be. Chinese parents will ask you to spend all your time to study. Asian parents that will never send their child to do labor unless, like, they absolutely has no
choice.
They're
their last asset. The child is the last.
Education is always first. Like you asked me about financial situation, my parents and my brother, my sister, they will sell their personal belongings just to pay my tuition.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, they will. Luckily, they don't have to.
Right,
just send me some
have.
Of them. They would.
Yeah.
Because that's how high they put the premium.
Here, would you go move back?
Oh, it's unlikely I will move in the near future unless really good.
Yeah, something crazy comes up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and with kids growing up here, we're very happy here. And the other thing I personally find is, which is one thing I find, it's hard to put a year in it. Like, economic, you can pretty much say 30 years. Like, China is lag behind 30 years. So you can see that some people even say less. Like, some people even say 10 years later.
Oh, okay.
You can see some part of China more advanced in the Western, which could be true. Some big city, or right now.
Yeah.
Anyway. I can see that. I can see hardwood. The tallest building will be in China. The fast train will be in China. The biggest airplane will be in China in the near future. But the one thing I think ideology or people's mindset, how you can't put a year in it. Like personally, I would think some people are thinking less openly than somebody in the Western 100 years ago. Mm. If I read, say, in legal field, I read Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes. Like he lived maybe 1920, mm-hmm. Almost 100 years ago. I read his ideas, and I think a lot of my peers can benefit too, and a lot of thinkers in the Western, Bertrand Russell, one of my favorite, I think he lived in U.S. for the longest time as
oh, really?
A philosopher, also almost 100 years ago. I mean, when you think about philosophy, the Eastern philosophy are kind of so different from Western, like you go to a bookstore, philosophy.
Yeah, right.
And not because it's in a Western country. I'm sure even in East country, it will be kind of true. 80% of book will be Western philosophy, like Socrates, Nietzsche, and Bertrand Russell. Because there's just more people writing about it.
Right.
And here in Barnes & Noble, you will get 5% of Eastern philosophy. Maybe Laozi, Confucius,
yeah.
One or two books. War, of, Art of War. So, which, as a Chinese, the sad part is, for 2,000 years, when we talk about philosophy, it's pretty much still Laozi and Confucius.
Mm.
That's pretty much it. A little Buddhism influence. So that's Chinese philosophy. If we talk about Chinese philosophy, we're still talking about 2,000
years. 2,000 years ago.
People have been adding to it, but then not that critical that you have to have a book in
right.
the bookstore to... to really get the picture of, like, if you, for you to understand Western philosophy, you have to read Socrates at one point, right?
Right.
You can't omit the book.
Right.
And then you have to read those German philosophers, Nietzsche. You have to read.
Right.
You
fundamental
take out,
part of it.
Yeah. So, but then these two are, like, from two countries, 1,000 years apart. So Western. The openness of this ideology is amazing to a Chinese because Socrates from Greek, right, and then Nietzsche is from German, but Bertrand Russell is from England and moved to United States, but they all added to this. I'm sure all this philosophy. Quote Socrates at
right,
one point.
Right. At one point,
so
they
make
read Socrates first. Yeah.
Make that consistency so we can categorize this as nobody will say, oh, you can't put that in Western philosophy, all this name. So, but then you look at the Chinese side, one or two names, that's it. So, we don't have a guy like Nietzsche that... You if you get his name out, people will say, "Oh, that's wrong." You can't put
right,
him
that's
back.
That's impossible. Yeah.
So that's the a little sad part of Chinese philosophy is we are very inclusive, so we tend not to be influenced by other culture. So we are consistently kind of proud of this way, but then not open enough to get new blood. Personally, just having the opportunity to be exposed to, I mean, I could read books in China, but living in a Western country and watching what people think about and you end up learning almost every day new things.
Right,
that,
yeah.
That kind of exposure, I don't think I can get the same amount if I live in China all my life. So that's one thing I really appreciate. Just open my own mind.
Right.
Not saying I have to become... I'll tell stories because this eventually will get into, hopefully, my jokes.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but then the process of learning and figuring things out, the comparison, is just fun. So personally, to answer your question, I'm kind of happy at this kind of...
In your situation.
Stage. Yeah.
And for your kids, do your kids speak Mandarin as well?
We try to speak, but it's a harder language to...
One of the hardest languages.
It is. It is, especially the writing part, because we tend to write... almost from the picture, get into all these strokes, making a character. Some character has 20 strokes.
Crazy.
Yeah, so to say one word.
So do your kids just be like, I don't want to
Exactly.
Like, this is insane.
I understand, because to communicate well, they don't need that.
Right.
Especially
here, yeah.
Exactly. So for us, one way is to expose them to more opportunity and eventually expose to them more culture stuff, story. Like certain story that Chinese has been telling to generations, it kind of can only understand if you know the language.
Gotcha, yeah.
So that part, they will kind of get into it. They would think, oh, that's the key. The language is the key to another huge treasure, in my opinion.
Right.
Right? So same thing, like English has been my key to a huge amount of a treasure.
Yeah, especially when you said that, like, technology words, like with your work, doesn't translate well. You need that or else you can't. Live, especially here, yeah.
And in some of the culture aspects, the Chinese story, one of the reasons Chinese culture can be so consistent in 3,000 years. I mean, I can almost categorically saying that 2,000 years ago, a Chinese was thinking very similar to me.
Mm.
Like, if we are communicating, besides the computer stuff, I don't show him the iPhone.
Right, he loses
his
mind.
We wouldn't confuse each other because a lot of value or things, the way we view the world, are very similar because we share this a set of story. Because story will tell you, hopefully, more deeper things about life. Couple story was so influential, like. You know, if he's Chinese, he knows that story, and he will apply that story. Is this old man's horse story? Old man's horse, but it's so influential that every Chinese use that story to cope with some life event. So the story goes like this: old man in a village, and one day he lost his horse, and people come in and say, oh, sorry, you lost your horse. And the old man say, oh, don't worry, sometimes bad things can become good things. And next day the horse come back with a group of like wild horse, so that belongs to him, and people congratulate him. Oh, you got extra horse, congratulations. And old man said, oh, don't be so fast. Bad things sometimes can become, a good thing can become bad things. And a couple months later, everybody was drafted to fight a war. But his son was playing with the white horses and fell down, broke his leg. So that's a really bad thing, right? But because the drafting skipped his son, he's the only young person get to live in the whole village. I mean, it can go on and on, but it gives you this true story. It can happen to everybody.
Right, right. Anything can happen.
Yeah, have this experience of experiencing something really bad, but turns out it's the blessing in the disguise. So,
right.
So, but that story was told 2,000 years ago, and everybody was telling them because the Chinese language has a way to condense a language into a phrase. So, four-word phrase, is the way we communicate. If I want to invoke that story, like an idiom, right? So all I say is omen horse, like omen horse.
Mm-hmm.
So it become part of the vocabulary.
So that's how you explain, like, don't worry, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, exactly.
It might be okay.
If we invoke the whole story with all this that people agree with, like, don't be caught up with the vicissitude of life.
Right.
And that's actually one strength of Chinese has. I think of those immigrants, like, 200 years ago, building railways, living alone in the United States, making minimum wages, and cannot see the family in 10, 20 years. How did they live their lives? But they just have this strength, like, maybe past this, our family will be living a better life.
Yeah.
So old man horse, but that's just one story. We
right.
have 1,000 of them. You get the key, you have the access of those 1,000 stories easily.
Yeah.
So you have the wisdom of these 2,000
generations.
Years.
Yeah.
So it's
centuries,
a key.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then again, there's a limitation. So all those is probably one aspect of the philosophy. So personally, I think it's deep.
But it's more general.
Yeah. It's lack of the analytical part that Western philosophy are good at. Like, even from Aristotle, he's talking about logic. He's
mm-hmm.
talking about divide things, cut things into parts, and if this part is true, that part cannot be true, and lead to really abstract stuff, like, and then metaphysical stuff.
Yeah.
So very analytical. But the Chinese is very vague. There's definitely two aspects to it. So, and personally, it would be ideal. It will be a combination of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one way you look at life in a very high level point of view, and then take a lot of things as natural. Like Lao Tzu tells us, like, just be like water, like Bruce Lee, like water.
Like water.
Yeah, life like water. You don't have to be able to describe it. Nobody is able to describe the mystery of life. Just
right.
leave that alone. Like, part of it, follow the flow, and do your best.
Yeah.
Bruce Lee would tell you to be your best. So that really helped Chinese to cope whatever changing life really well.
Mm-hmm.
Because kind of there's always this faith.
Yeah,
in life, faith in the general things. Even the worst things can can turn into a good thing.
So, is there, before we wrap this up, is there anything, if you could tell an American who might not know a lot of immigrants, or all they hear is what's on the news, if there's one thing that you could share with them about being an immigrant in the United States, what would you say that is?
I will actually want people to see that people are the same. Like the immigrants are really the same kind of people, because 99% of my time as an immigrant, I'm doing things has nothing to do with an immigrant. Like
right.
today, like, I'm worried, what should I take my kids, whether to a park or to the beach, and it's 90 degrees outside, we got to do something, and then we have to worry what give them to eat.
Yeah.
And I have to worry about myself. Tomorrow I have to get to work. Did I have any email that I didn't reply to? and if I have financial issue, I worry about how much money I have in my account. All these things that everybody has to worry about, family, money, has nothing to do with whether you are born in America or you're immigrant.
Right.
So they're just the people. If you can see through this label And you see people as just like you worry about how to make your life better, make your family better, and how to, of course, immigrants are the person who really follow the rules, actually. Like, we're so afraid. Like I have to constantly worry about if there's something that will single me out.
Right.
And am I doing something wrong? Because I lack of the safety net. To catch me. I have 100 relatives who will help me no matter what. They are back in China.
Right,
so,
right, all
so,
your help is...
So for a normal person, whatever, like I might be a very aggressive person back in China, I would tune down a couple notch because I'm in another country. So,
right.
So, of course, a law-abiding citizen. So the percentage of immigrant being a troublemaker, I would say personally, is less. Less. So, and 99% of time, we were just doing things that any other people has to worry about. The one thing we don't have enough time to get to, because I can only give my perspective as a my kind of immigrant. There's so many kind of different immigrant.
Yeah.
A specific thing about my province is historically Fujian province, there's a lot of people trying to get to US illegally.
Really?
I actually met many people and there's two aspects of their life. One, their life is really hard because they don't have status. They work really hard. The second thing is they're really successful. Every Chinese buffet restaurant in Chicago I went to, I know the owner is from my province.
Really?
Yeah, because what they do is they came to United States, have no money, they work day and night for like 7 to 8 years, and they pay off the debts they have to pay for the process.
Transport, yeah.
And then their relative who's already here or friends will pull up a money, like loan, given to them, and they will use the money to rent, to open a restaurant. So they have the support. And then the restaurant can run a couple years later with the profit. They're doing really well.
Interesting.
They're a business owner. So from the bottom of the society, they just ascend, thankfully, to kind of system of helping each other. But then it doesn't change the fact they are illegal.
Right,
from the get-go,
illegally.
Right?
Yeah.
So I can't tell that perspective because I come in legally, but being from the same province, I really have the empathy of these people. I mean, if I wish that from the start it's a legal process.
Right.
I mean, we should never condemn or condone illegal activity, because how can we live normal life if there's a set of people doing illegal things?
Right.
But then in their situation, yeah, it's the entry part. I know Mexican has the same issue, right? So a lot of people, the entry part is illegal, but then the rest of it's just, I can really feel empathetic, right?
Well,
as
yeah,
an immigrant.
And I've had...
But then I can't change the fact of the entry part. But then that's, if we look back, that's how America started.
That's how the whole thing happened.
Yeah,
yeah.
You can condone, you can kind of criticize the action, because the fact you enter a country illegally, you don't respect the law at that point. But then if we look at the history, it's human nature. You cannot criticize this person morally, because the first group of people coming to U.S. really are not applying visa
right, like you want these people to.
It's a human nature. They want to flow to a place they believe they can have better life.
Right.
And they kind of knowing they're sneaking in, but they sneaking in with this hope that I'm here to almost contribute because I'm here to working hard. And they actually went through the hardest. I couldn't do their job.
And that is part of, that was like the core of why I started this podcast. Because the first episode is a friend of mine, Miguel, from Mexico. and his story of coming here, because he did come illegally and snuck through, and it is a crazy story.
Yeah.
At like 12, and it's like absolutely, and now he was young, so he didn't know like the struggle that pushed his parents to bring him here, because if I could interview his dad, I'm sure that's a whole different story, you know, and it's, when you see that stuff, that's why I hear, he told me that story one night, I just could not believe it, and I was like, that's what made me do this whole show. I was like, everyone needs to hear. Now, honestly, I'd like to talk to anyone from China who came and opened up a shop. Like, and I don't, like I said, I never encourage any illegal activity at all, but I don't discriminate against people because everyone's here for different reasons. I would love to talk to someone who had to come here and started, however you got to the paperwork of starting a restaurant while being illegal is insane, because you have to like provide IDs, social security numbers, they come and let you out of your house, all that address, so... as we wrap up here, this is actually my last episode of the season. So we're doing, I'm breaking the show up into seasons, so you are the tenth episode of season one. If you are listening to this and you are an immigrant or you know an immigrant who would like to share their story, they can come to my house, I can go to their house, we can sit down, just contact me at brokenenglishpodcast@gmail.com or on the contact page at brokenenglishpodcast.com. Once again, thank you so much. I mean, this is incredible. I really enjoyed sitting down, and you are, this is a great end of the season. This is excellent. And once again, anyone listening to this, thank you so much, and I hope you enjoyed it.